This episode of the YVR Screen Scene podcast is brought to you by Fish Flight Entertainment.
This episode was sponsored in part by listeners like you. Join our Patreon community and receive early access to episodes, bonus content, stickers, buttons, and more. Visit www.patreon.com/YVRScreenScenePodcast.
Welcome to the YVR Screen Scene Podcast, where we pull back the curtain and expose the beating heart to the Vancouver film and television industry, namely the actors and filmmakers and other talented artists who do the work. Capital T, capital W. I'm Sabrina Rani Firminger. Today I am absolutely delighted to welcome Meredith Hama Brown to the YVR Screen Scene podcast. Meredith is the force behind Seagrass, which is arguably one of the most talked about feature film directorial debuts to come out of Canada in recent memory. First, the accolades. Seagrass played to sold out crowds at TIFF, that's Toronto International Film Festival, won the coveted International Film Critics Award, the Fipresky Prize, and was selected for Canada's TIFF Top 10 Showcase screening. Seagrass is the story of a family falling apart, or maybe one that was never all together in the first place. The film stars Ali Mackie as Judith, a Japanese-Canadian woman who brings her family to a self-development retreat after the recent death of her mother. When Judith and her husband Steve befriend another interracial couple, played by Chris Pang and Sarah Gadden, who seem to have the perfect marriage, Judith begins to recognize how irreparably fractured her relationship is. When their distressed relationship begins to affect the children's emotional security, the family is forever changed. Seagrass is devastating and engrossing, and is somehow at once a family drama and a ghost story and a 1990s period piece set against a startling Pacific Northwest backdrop and lovingly shot by the exceptionally talented cinematographer Norm Lee. And as a child of an interracial couple that didn't have the tools to address the racial gulf between them, and probably still don't, and the ways that golf impacted the whole family, I can say that this film goes a long way to providing clarity and giving a voice to feelings that I personally have never seen depicted on screen in this nuanced and effective a way. Seagrass had its highly anticipated North American theatrical release last month and will be available on VOD on April 2nd. So today, we'll speak with Meredith Hama Brown about her journey to this moment. Meredith Hama Brown, welcome to the YVR Screen Scene podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so great to be here to chat with you about the film.
And I have promised Meredith, because I'm recording at home today, that if the cats, Wade Wilson and Vanessa, they want to make themselves known, we will take the time for them to be admired. Okay, yes. I promise. Why this story for your feature film directorial debut?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways it was the time for me to make this particular film. And, you know, I've written features in the past and I didn't finish them or they didn't feel like the right one to put forward into the world. But when I started to write this one, there was definitely like a clear sense that this was the one. I don't know exactly why, but I think it's because I just felt like, you know, maybe it was the right time for me, but also it just felt like these were the themes that I really wanted to talk about and that I knew that I could stay very committed to for the whole multi-year process of making this. And as I began to delve into it further and further, that feeling solidified. So yeah, I guess I'm sure other, directors out there have felt this way before, writer directors. And, you know, I think for some reason it just felt like the right story. There's so much, I think, that's explored in the film. It looks at motherhood and the complexity and challenges around that. It looks at not just motherhood, but a woman who's trying to self-actualize, who's craving a stronger sense of connection with herself. It's about kind of doubts within a marriage and fractures within a marriage. It's about sibling rivalry, the mixed race experience, as you touched on, and specifically it looks at Japanese Canadian identity in, definitely a very specific way. And I think at the heart of it, though, and I've said this in many interviews, because I think it's the truth. When I was writing this, I needed a way to tie this all together. And I did have a way, because I knew from the beginning that this film was about uncertainty. And so when I started to look at all of the different characters and what they were going through, I knew that as long as I kept what they were going through anchored in this sense of uncertainty, then that was what was most important for me to explore overall. And all of the multiple themes.
Going into the process, going into production and the process of actually making a film, did you feel certain? Did you have uncertainty? Like, tell me about, you know, is there any connection between what you've just described and also who you were as a director at the beginning of that process?
I mean, beginning, middle, and end. Yes, absolutely. I think that the reason why uncertainty is something I very much gravitate towards, probably in a lot of my work, is because I find it to be a very powerful state to be in, very challenging. I deal with a lot of anxiety myself, maybe, you know, larger than what some people deal with. And so it's something that I find I'm always, questioning is how do we move through uncertainty, knowing that that's just part of our human condition, that it never really goes away. It might go away for a little bit, but it always will come back, because that is just what being human is. So I think that's why I was very drawn to this theme. And of course, making a feature, I encountered it even more than when I'm not making a film, when I'm just sitting around watching TV or something. So yeah, I think that's why I was so drawn to that theme for sure. Yeah. And I can definitely relate to it for sure.
When you were having moments of uncertainty or being aware as you're standing there in the sand that, like, I am making my first feature film, how did you navigate that? Because obviously you were successful. This film, I mean, honestly, just having a film is success. And then, you know, it's been, you know, embraced so warmly by audiences and critics and festivals. But how did you navigate those moments?
I don't fully know, because it was different at different times. I think, you know, probably prep and post were the hardest times to deal with uncertainty, because during the actual shoot, there was no time to think. And in a weird way, that was good, because I think, you know, when you have less time to think about all the things that you're unsure about or that can go wrong, you just kind of are constantly acting. And I think that's, you know, a really nice state to be in. It really does help with uncertainty. The rest of the time, I think I just did what most people have to do, which is that you just keep going through it as best you can and, like, trying to, find the ways that you can push through it and just stay grounded as much as possible.
The casting in this film is inspired. I mean, it's everybody is just firing on all cylinders. But, you know, the key role really is the role of Judith, because that's really the foundation stone. Even though for me, that I felt like my avatar was Stephanie, because that's totally because I was that age in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
So I get it. But when you were casting the role of Judith, what qualities were you looking for? And what was it that, you know, Ali brought to the role and then made it her own?
Yeah. I mean, it's, again, this is another part of, I think, the process that when you just, you know, when you find that person, because it's intangible. Mm-hmm. I think that you could say, oh, I'm looking for these specific things, but then someone could come into the room and be like, oh no, that is the character somehow. And I think for me, Ali just exudes this, I don't know, she had this maturity to, and she does in like her soul, I guess. So I think that there was just something that really was reaching the depth of the character. And I know that she really connected with the material right off the bat. And like our first conversation that we had, it was a Zoom meeting and we were both crying in it a little. Like we really both truly connected to each other, and she also connected to the material. And I think that just showed in like what she brought to the character. So yeah, it was just really wonderful to find her because she was the one.
Yeah. We are all on journeys with our identity, right? So there's a lot of projects about identity, but there are so few that actually deal with the grittiness of interracial relationships and what it means to be parents as well. You know, what kind of conversations, or are you hoping to inspire conversations, you know, about, you know, interracial relationships, people coming from different cultures, different ethnicities, you know, with your film?
Yeah. Well, I think that I knew when I was writing it that it was very important for Judith's character that I think she's not being seen in many ways by her husband. I think there's so much that he's missing, and he may be trying in his own ways, but he's falling short. And I think that is such an isolating feeling for someone to feel in a relationship. Mm. And I've heard, you know, a lot of people going through breakups and feeling that way, and kind of when they get out on the other side, expressing that. So I knew that would be part of the equation in terms of, you know, their interracial marriage would be a conflict as well. I think that, of course, interracial relationships can work very well too. So I do want to emphasize that, you know, it's not necessarily that I think that this is always the case. It certainly was more specific to this film. Mm-hmm. You know, I know my own parents, for example, I was not basing this off of their relationship, because although they did divorce, they had a completely different divorce, different issues in their relationship that are very different from the film. Mm-hmm. But I did just feel like whenever two people go into a relationship, they're always bringing who they are to it. And that can always be a source of conflict. And I think especially with different cultural backgrounds, of course, there's going to be things that people miss. And if those two people are not trying, or especially if Steve's character is not trying to really meet her in the middle or meet her anywhere, then it's like that's really at the heart of the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the most astounding characters. I've probably used that word a few times in this interview already because your film is so astounding. But one of the astounding characters in this film is just the Pacific Northwest. It's the water, it's the caves, it's just the scenery. Why was it important for you to set this film in this particular location?
Well, I think the BC coast was super important to the themes around Japanese Canadian identity, because of course, when Japanese Canadians were forcibly removed, they were forcibly removed specifically from the BC coast, and incarcerated and dispossessed and never able to return to their previous communities there. I mean, some people returned to the coast over time, but the communities were gone.
Yeah.
So to me, the coast was important, but there was also something that I was very interested in about the family going to an island. There's just something so secluded about that. It's almost like they're trapped not only on the island, but also on the retreat within the island. So those were a few things. And then I also just feel like for me, the water is so evocative of emotion, but also danger. And, you know, this kind of, yeah, I think for me, it's just such a mysterious symbol. So that's another reason why I wanted to include it.
Give me some of the most memorable moments that you had during that process of filming on that island.
Yeah.
Like, so what comes to mind when you're like, when you cast your mind back?
Oh, a lot of things, but there's definitely some key parts that were very, you know, memorable. So we shot, although this is set on a fictional island in British Columbia, we shot predominantly on Great Gabriel Island, but some things such as the cave were shot in Tofino and Ucluelet. And the cave that we found was in Tofino, and it was actually two separate caves.
Wow, yeah, the magic of filmmaking.
Right next to each other.
Yeah.
In order to get to these caves. And also there was a third cave, which is a cave build, which we built inside of, you know, somewhere else. I don't want to give anything away, but that was very expertly organized by Louisa Burke and the production designer. But the caves that we were shooting at in Tofino, you have to walk 15 minutes from the parking lot to the caves around this bend. And we had to walk all the gear in. And there was, you know, a bunch of kids in those scenes that we were bringing in. But the challenging part is that if you don't get out within 3 hours, or, you know, the tides actually come in. And it, of course, was not dangerous because we knew exactly when the tides were coming in. But it was just stressful being like, okay, we have all this stuff to bring in, all this stuff to shoot, all this stuff to bring out. So it was a little bit stressful, but it ended up going super well once we were there, fortunately.
Yeah. And Norm is somebody who has shot like really beautiful. I mean, he's so talented, but you know, especially like exteriors and water and reflections, like that is, it's totally his jam, right? I don't want to put your film in a box, but I'm also finding it kind of hard to assign like a genre to it. How do you describe it? You know, if you're forced to, if we were back in the video store times and, you know, you're at Blockbuster or Rogers and you had to put your film somewhere, where would you put it?
Well, what I usually describe it as is a dark, tense family drama with some elements of a ghost story. So that didn't really help because I think I would put it in the drama section overall, but I wouldn't be mad if people put it somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have the experience making the film, editing the film, you know, getting it, you know, ready to send to festivals. And then you have this experience at TIFF. What expectations did you have going into TIFF? And then what was your reaction to everything, all of the energy that kind of really swirled? I mean, even me just checking on social media during that time, like there was so much interest and love for this film at TIFF.
Well, yeah, I don't know what I expected. I knew what I hoped.
Ooh, right? Okay. What'd you hope?
Of course, I hoped for a good, warm reception. And I really hoped that, you know, people would see it. And I didn't expect anything because I think I was just so scared. And I think I was like, I don't know how it's going to go over. You don't really know until you get to that point. So, you know, I think all I can say is that I hoped for a warm reception. I hope people would connect with the film. I hope that they would see it. And I'm so happy that people have come to see it and that, you know, yes, that we did have a warm reception overall.
Was there anything in the audience reaction or even in conversations that you had with audience members afterwards that surprised you?
So many things, really. Like, it's just little bits and pieces that I hear every once in a while. I can't put my finger on one thing because it's like sometimes there's this odd question that I'm like, oh, that's a completely different way of framing it. Yeah, like even one review, I guess this is different than people coming up after, but they said that, you know, it plays like a thriller almost. And I was like, oh yeah, that's interesting. And I can kind of see that. So yeah, it's interesting just people's perceptions. And something that has been really beautiful as well is people coming up to me and saying, this experience happened to me, you know, and this has happened for in different ways. Like some people will say, this was, you know, I had a very similar sibling dynamic as the one shown in the film, or this exact moment where, you know, there's some racist moments in the film, this exact thing happened to me. So it's really interesting to hear those comments and to know that it's like reflecting, you know, some people's, you know, things that hit close to home for some people.
Yeah, the casual racism of the 90s and up to today.
Yeah.
Being called exotic, people saying where you're from and justify your existence.
Yeah.
I get it. I've lived it.
Yeah.
What does Seagrass tell us about the kinds of films that Meredith Hema Brown is going to make moving forward?
Well, they won't be full-on comedies. They may be a little funny at times, but I don't know. I think that you know, there's definitely themes that I gravitate towards that I have in a lot of my work. And I think they come up in Seagrass. I think I definitely have an interest in the theme of grief. I think I'm definitely very interested in female driven narratives. I think I'm definitely interested in kind of these bigger complex questions that we have as humans that we don't know how to make sense of. And of course, racial identity, which is shown in Seagrass. But I think for me, when I'm thinking about approaching the next project, these themes just work their way in naturally. Like I certainly don't try to, you know, I want to have varied themes and not, you know, I want them to come naturally, I guess. So yeah, we'll see what I'm sure as I evolve as a human, maybe my themes will, and I'm sure some things will stay because I think all writer directors kind of have themes that they just feel very close to.
Do you have an avatar in the film?
I think I really had to connect with the three female characters, to be honest. I really had to get into each of their heads. And like, even though I'm, you know, not Judith, I don't have that relationship or children, I really had to, you know, put a lot of my own anxieties of what being a mother could look like into her. And I certainly have many to draw from. So, you know, I was definitely really getting in the headspace, and I am a younger sister, but I really was getting into the headspace of Stephanie as well, because I was thinking about just how challenging it must be for older siblings. I mean, you know, how challenging it must be for older siblings to really, they really have to take care of their younger siblings, and they have so much responsibility. And, you know, I can imagine in a lot of scenarios that adds pressure to them. But I was also really relating just to her sort of coming of age aspect and how she's trying to seek a sense of belonging. You know, like I certainly remember those aspects of my own adolescence as well. So yeah, I would say all three fairly equally by the time the writing process ended.
And I got to tell you, I have a 13-year-old, and it's the same today. Those things have not changed. I call that coming of age stuff. Seagrass hits video on demand on April 2nd. Is there anything else that you would like audiences to know before they settle into their couch with their popcorn and their cat to watch the film? That's literally how I watched it, popcorn and cats.
No, I would just say get your popcorn, get your cat or other chosen animal, or no animal at all. And yeah, I just hope people are able to enjoy the film.
Oh, they absolutely will. Meredith, where can people find you and follow you and celebrate you and your journey in filmmaking on social media or on the interwebs?
Yeah, well, I have a website. It's www.meredithhama-brown.com, I think. And my Instagram handle is pretty much the same, but I think with no dash. So it's pretty easy to find. And there's also a Seagrass Film Instagram as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and congratulations on your film.
Thank you so much.
All right, listeners, thank you as well. Please like, subscribe, leave us a review if you're so inclined. They help us find more listeners. And honestly, we can keep having the conversations like the rad one that we had today with Meredith. You can find us at yvrscreenscene.com. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and Mastodon and Threads. And I think Mari made me a TikTok. You can basically find me somewhere. And if one closes, I'll pop up somewhere else. At yvrscreenscene and at Sabrina. The YVR Screen Scene podcast is hosted and executive produced by me, Sabrina Rani Mera Firminger. And oh, here come Firmingers. It's edited by Simon Firminger. Special thanks to Mariana Firminger for recording our Patreon ad and to Paul Firminger for technical support. YVR Screen Scene is a division of, oh, you know, this is the joke for the season, guys. Firminger, I mean Fish Flight Entertainment. See, it's a terrible joke, but it's the joke of the season, so you gotta roll with it. Join us next time for another deep dive into Vancouver's dynamic film and television scene. And cut! This ad begins with a story about an important but largely forgotten piece of Hollywood North history, the Fish Flight. In the 1980s, the Fish Flight was an early morning flight from Vancouver that delivered fresh fish to Los Angeles before the start of the business day. These were the early days of Hollywood North, before digital deliveries and fast transfer speeds, and the pioneers of the Vancouver film industry began loading up the Fish Flight with film reels so Hollywood execs could review the footage shot on the previous day. The fish fight was also one of the building blocks of the visual effects and animation mecca that is present-day Vancouver. And Fish Flight Entertainment builds on this legacy. Fish Flight Entertainment serves the games, film, and television industries. We remember the days of the fish flight and attack our projects with the same passion as those pioneering days of yore. We believe in jumping off the cliff and building our wings on the way down. And who knows? That old fish with improvised wings may even fly. Learn more about Fish Flight Entertainment at fishflightentertainment.com. That's fishflightentertainment.com.